Renovations have begun on a 19th century cotton mill in Greensboro, Georgia. The mill will become a craft brewery and loft apartments. But 11 years ago, developer Nathan McGarity made a surprising discovery in the mill's rafters. He found a trove of old letters and pictures that revealed a little-known piece of Georgia history. And Nathan joins me this morning. Hi, Nathan.
Good morning.
Also with us is Stephen Brown. He's archivist emeritus at the University of Georgia's Hargrett Rare Book and Manuscript Library, where the collection is now stored. Thanks for being with us as well, Stephen.
Good morning from Athens.
Nathan, can you first describe how you discovered you were taking a walk of the property with a former owner? How did you find these boxes?
Well, we were actually walking around with the former maintenance director of the mill, and this guy's been around since they were using leather belts on machinery. So it's really interesting to ask him a lot of questions. He knew all the history of the mill, and we were walking. The mill had been in bankruptcy, so it was completely almost vacant of the machinery. It was part of a court order back in 2005. And anyhow, looked up, asked what was in those boxes, and with a puzzled look, it was like he had never asked the question himself and was a little embarrassed that he didn't know. And it turned out it was four wooden crates that had been nailed shut, and we were the first ones to open them in 61 years.
And when you opened them, from what I understand, they were in surprisingly good shape.
Yeah, archival methods are not to keep it between 15 and 110 degrees and at, you know, 80% humidity. I'm sure that's not their recommendation, but the documents were, the linen paper was as white as cotton. There were no silverfish. It had been wrapped in butcher paper, and the pine boxes, nail shop. I don't know if it was just the height that it just never had any deterioration whatsoever. We actually had photographs that were as brand new.
Clear,
as you can get.
Yeah. Stephen, can you give me some context on how surprising that is, that after all that time, decades and decades, they would still be in that kind of condition?
Oh, it's astounding. Normally the heat, I would have thought, would have aged terrifically. Obviously, it's been very dry and must have been pretty well moderated as far as temperature, because it, as Nathan said, it looks like it came out of the typewriter yesterday. It's beautiful.
Stephen, what kind of size is this collection? How many documents and photos are in it?
The photographs, I'd say there's probably about 30 photographs in three segments, workers in the mill, exterior of the mill, and then a wonderful collection of the mill village, the housing. So three components, and each one probably contains about 10, 15 photographs of each. The rest of the collection fits in about five boxes, large document boxes.
So mill village is probably not something that people are very familiar with, Nathan. I mean, again, when we're talking about the 19th century, that means we're talking about the 1800s. Did workers live right near the mill where they worked?
They did, actually. And this mill probably is not really a good example of just you know, run of the mill. This mill was
pardon
actually
the pun.
Yeah. This was one of the only mills in the state, actually, as of 1910, and 171 textile mills out there. This was the only one named after the founders' wives. So they took a lot of pride. The founders built houses, stately houses, only a block away. The curbing was lined with granite. They did have mill houses, and the mill maintained them up until the 1950s, 1955, I think is when they sold off the mill houses to the people, you know, to the employees that lived there. But it was a wonderful community. It really was.
Now, the letters themselves, they go pretty far into the weeds in details on sort of some changes happening in labor law and how that involved the federal government and the mill. And we don't have to get into all those details because they're weedy. But what's the, in broad strokes, what were all these letters talking about?
Pretty much in broad strokes, it was the Textile Workers Union of America bringing kind of the union order to Georgia for the textile industries.
So, Stephen, what kind of historical significance does that, having these kind of, because he preserved both sides of this communication. So what kind of historical significance is it to have this much detail on this discussion?
I think it's having it in such a clear linear fashion. It's very neatly filed, laid out. You can see the interactions between the union, the mill owners, and the National War Labor Board. And just being able to go through it in a straight fashion and turn pages and read a coherent story is remarkable, because often, as you said, often we have just one side of the story. And then a lot of the fun of the collection, too, is there's so much even beyond that, showing at the in back of these negotiations, the daily way the mill operates, production. You can almost see the mill running through these documents. Right down to, we mentioned the mill village, I'm sitting here with a brochure of mill cottage paints. They saved wonderful little detailed ephemera. So that in addition to seeing the general flow of business and union negotiations, you really have the whole mill sort of buzzing away in the background, and you get a very complete picture of everything that's going on during this war production.
Nathan, how important was this mill to the community of Greensboro at that time?
Oh, it was huge. I mean, they back in the 40s, they had an annual payroll of over 300,000. So you can imagine running three shifts. I mean, I think they had about 350 people that were employed directly by the mill. That's not to, you know, nowadays we count employment by, you know, secondary tiers, but directly by the mill, 350 people. That's a huge economic driver in a small town.
It is. If you're just joining us, my guests are developer Nathan McGarity and archivist Stephen Brown. We're talking about a 19th century cotton mill in Greensboro. It's now being developed into a craft brewery with apartments. But we're talking about the discovery of some documents and photos that were in the rafters and crates in the rafters that have opened up sort of a window to history. And the reason I asked Nathan about how important it was is because what Stephen's describing, the day-to-day workings of the mill, to a certain extent, this discovery has let us understand what life was like for people in Greensboro because the mill was so much a crucial part of the community.
Yeah, I think it was, and I mean, we see here Gideon Brooks was the curator of these documents. He was the manager from 1946 that put these documents into the boxes and nailed them shut. But what you see here is the humanity behind both the employee and the management, and also the union. And you see kind of all sides and how they were intertangled. It's very much like some of those films that you would see, where it gives you a viewpoint from everybody. And often it's not the view is not what you thought it was when you first first read it in the history books.
So, Stephen, how do you go about archiving this kind of collection? What kind of time commitment is it? And then how many different areas of study does it relate to?
Well, it's not as much a time commitment as some of the collections we receive that have been, you know, serving as nests for squirrels or accumulating other trash since this was so clean. But we do need to put it in a coherent order. I did not process this collection. I have a feeling that probably Mr. Brooks left it in a pretty logical order. Is that right, Nathan?
That's correct. I'm sorry if we messed it up for you when we brought it in, but we had been thumbing through it for a couple years there. So,
well, no, it looks very well organized and easy to access. So it probably was not as big a time commitment. Now, of course, we want to move every piece of paper into a neutral environment because acid is definitely the enemy of
acid
all the papers.
Acid that so can be on our fingers.
Now, on our fingers, greases on our fingers, but particularly in the papers. So the boxes, the folders we place these materials in are completely neutral as far as acid. This collection does not contain a lot of newspaper. That's normally where we get into serious problems when there's a lot of news clippings because newspaper is very acidic. This all seems to be very stable material. We've sleeved the photographs because the oils on human fingers are very bad on photographic paper. And then, of course, contrary to how it has lived in the past, lived very well, we're putting it in a much cooler, drier environment. So we hope we can get a good deal more than even the amazing 70 years that we've got it out of collection already.
Yeah, I assume it doesn't go back into pine boxes. So, Nathan, knowing this history, how does that influence, if it does, your development and how you go about renovating this property?
Well, first of all, I think it was a great inspiration for preserving the property. I mean, it was one of those things that the building at the time that we were able to finally get financing worked out, it had already had a partial collapse, and most people would have looked at it and said, you know, go ahead and push the rest of the wall over and bring down the last bit of roof. But you just, when it has that much history, and rather interesting, the building that they were actually doing the brewery in was actually part of a Cherokola bottling plant. The mill acquired it during the Great Depression so that they could maintain three shifts for their employees to still be able to pay, you know, pay the bills. And
they were diversifying so that they wouldn't have to lay people off.
Well, that's true, but I'd like to see a company do that today. And I mean, for somebody to take that much care of their employees is just absolutely astounding. And the building that it goes from bottling plant to private ownership of the mill to union control, and actually some of the funds that we're using are actually federal funds, so we have to use union wages to preserve the building that preserved the document that was preserved by the guy who hated the unions. It's rather odd, and then it's going to be private, you know, back to a bottling plant, so it's kind of a historical palindrome.
How many buildings are on this property, separate buildings?
You really could break out the site into its multiple buildings, but the site altogether was about 14 acres. The two oldest structures are under construction right now and be opening up in early September for the loft apartments. We're doing the brewery right now in the building that actually carried the finished product during the Great Depression. And then there's still 9 acres and the walls of a cotton bale opening warehouse that's left. And the city of Greensboro is absolutely phenomenal for their progressive ideas. So they're certainly open to new ideas on that property
on
as well.
How to take care of it. That is Nathan Bagarity. He's a developer in Greensboro, Georgia. He's talking about the renovations of a former cotton mill there. And Stephen Brown is an archivist emeritus at the University of Georgia's Hargrett Rare Book and Manuscript Library. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thanks, Celeste.
Thank you.
In other brewing news, beer giant Miller Coors has acquired a majority stake of Terrapin Brewing Company. Terrapin is based in Athens. The popular local brand will be assigned to Miller Coors Craft Brewery Division, 10th and Blake. Financial details have not yet been disclosed, but the transaction is expected to be completed by next month.